So the topic for today will be nourishing and satisfying our emotions by living the bhakti culture. This is what we'll be not only discussing but exploring, because it may be a subject matter that we're not so familiar with. I wanted to clarify some key words before we begin. If you understand the words that we're using, then you can catch the concept a lot easier. Feeling. Feeling denotes any partly mental, partly physical, conscious response marked by pleasure, pain, like that. Good feeling to be in the sun when it's been cold for a few days. Emotion. Emotion is more subtle than feeling, although feeling is involved. With emotions, there is a heart connection, which is born of some kind of sense of relationship. So, subtle difference, but a primary one. Process, I've given two definitions because I couldn't find a way to put it all into one, and I wanted it to be clear. First one, a systematic procedure designed to give a specific result. B, a series of ongoing actions designed to give a specific result. Culture, we can look at it in three ways. We're looking here at the difference between process and culture. Culture, we can look at it in three ways. First one, the shared beliefs, values, goals, and practices that characterize a social group and give both the individual and the society stability, and which give longevity to the society. Second one, an integrated pattern of knowledge, belief, and behavior that is handed down to succeeding generations through practical, ongoing learning experiences. The third way we can look at it is we can look at it as a verb, to culture something. So here we're looking about consciously nourishing something that we want to grow. So we can look at it in that way also. Now, the bhakti culture is actually inherent within the devotional process that we're presently practicing. But many of us, we don't recognize it. If we do, we don't really understand it, and we're not living it. And so often we feel and we see amongst our devotees there's not a real sense of well-being or stability, not only in their devotional life, but in their general life in general. So let's have a look at this. Just a little introduction. We were born into a culture of material sense gratification. And we were born into it many, 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 many times. We're expert. But I have a question for you. Does material sense gratification give nourishment and satisfaction to us emotionally?
No.
No. Okay. We keep trying.
Yeah, been trying, knowing it's not doing it, so still trying.
Yeah, okay. Now I have a little bit of a tricky, not a tricky, but a bit sticky question for you. We gave up material sense gratification because we weren't getting that sense of well-being and stability that we wanted in our lives and our hearts. And we took to the devotional process. Is the devotional process as we're presently practicing it nourishing and satisfying our emotions?
Not really, no.
Very little. At times.
Okay. Now, I want to have a look at this a little bit in terms of a historical and social perspective. We're members of ISKCON. What does ISKCON mean?
International Society for Krishna Consciousness.
Okay. So we can understand then, if it's a society, to function appropriately and meaningfully, there has to be a cultural base. Mm. We're a very young movement, and that cultural base hasn't yet developed. Mm. There's not even a real need, not even a real awareness of a need for it yet. So at the moment, ISKCON, in practical terms, more stands for International School for Krishna Consciousness. Because we're dealing with regulations, we're dealing with a process, some sense of social structure, but certainly not enough to dedicate your life to fully.
Very correct.
Okay. So, what's the alternative? It's given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The blueprint is actually given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it's to live the bhakti culture. To live the bhakti culture. We're practicing the process of bhakti, but to live the culture fully also. And what, in a nutshell, is that? I want to have a look at this from three angles of vision. Just little insights for us to think about. The first one is from Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion preface. There he says, the basic principle of the living condition is that we have a general propensity to love someone. No one can live without loving someone else. This propensity is present in every living being. The missing point, however, is where to repose our love so that everyone can become happy. Our love can be fully satisfied only when it is reposed in Krishna. If we learn how to love Krishna, then it is very easy to immediately and simultaneously love every living being. So that's a very beautiful way of putting it. But let's have a look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Krishna Samhita. He's a little bit more technical in his presentation. And it's very interesting to hear about this. He says, the living entity, this is from his conclusion of Krishna Samhita. The living entity is full of spiritual bliss. The soul is pure knowledge and blissfulness is his constitution. The thread of relationship between a living entity and the absolute truth, who is eternally full of knowledge and bliss, is called priti, or love. This thread of love eternally connects the happiness of the living entities with the happiness of the Lord. The quality of their love is mutually attractive. It is most pleasing, subtle, and pure. When a living entity falls into the net of illusion, however, he shuns the loving service of the Lord and searches for enjoyment in the material world. Knowing him to be an offender, Maya, the maidservant of Krishna, then imprisons him. We are suffering in the material world due to this offense. Our constitutional duties in the form of loving God have become reflected as attachment from material objects, and this increases our inauspiciousness. At this juncture, cultivation of our constitutional duties is our only prayojan or goal of life. As long as we're conditioned, we can't purely practice our constitutional duties. Our constitutional propensities are neither lost nor can they be lost. They are simply in a dormant state. As soon as one starts cultivation of those duties, they will awaken from their dormant state and again shine brightly. Their liberation and attainment of Vaikuntha will automatically ensue. But since liberation is not our goal of life, it is not our prayojan. Love is our goal of life. Krishna Prem is our goal of life, and therefore our only prayojan. Very beautiful statement. And I wanted to read you from Prabhupada's Krishna book. This is another interesting perspective on this same topic. This is from his preface. He says here, the art of focusing one's attention on the Supreme and giving one's love to him is called Krishna Consciousness. International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I'm going to read this again. The art of focusing one's attention on the Supreme and giving one's love to him is called Krishna Consciousness. We have inaugurated the Krishna Consciousness movement so that everyone can satisfy his propensity for loving others simply by directing his love toward Krishna. The real fact is that people can be happy only by loving Krishna. If one simply reposes his dormant loving propensity in Krishna, then his life becomes successful. This is not a fiction, but is a fact that can be realized by practical application. One can directly perceive the effects that love for Krishna has on his life. So just a little bit of an insight into what we're talking about when we're talking about bhakti culture. So let's have a closer look at it. The bhakti culture is specifically designed to spiritually nourish and satisfy us holistically. Not just emotionally, not just physically, intellectually, but holistically. The bhakti culture is specifically designed to spiritually nourish and satisfy us holistically by systematically and pleasingly bringing the body and mind into line with us, the soul. But it doesn't neglect or minimize the needs of the mind or the body, the subtle or the gross body. So let's read a little bit about this from Srila Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion, because obviously the verb to culture is being mentioned here. We're talking about some kind of cultivation that's necessary. And Prabhupada brings this up in his introduction to Nectar of Devotion. He says, devotional service is a sort of cultivation. As soon as we say cultivation, we must refer to activity. Without activity, consciousness alone cannot help us. There are activities of the body, activities of the mind, and activities of speech. And all such activities must be in relationship with Krishna. This cultivation of Krishna consciousness is not material. Any activities done in devotional service or in Krishna consciousness are directly under the control of spiritual energy. We should always mold the activities of our lives in such a way that we will constantly remember Vishnu or Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. Now, we don't want to get too theoretical, because then our minds will be start to think about something else. It's just the way the mind works. So, to take a little bit of a diversion, let's have a look at what this bhakti culture looks like in its perfected stage. What does it look like in its perfected stage? Now, our aspiration is Krishna Prem, Braj Prem, to be specific. So that means our concept of perfection will be in relation to Braj Prem.
Yes.
So I wanted to read a little bit to you, first from Sanatana Goswami, his Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and then a little bit from what Prabhupada said in Krishna book. This is from Sanatana Goswami. We're talking the perfection of this culture, this bhakti culture. The Vrajvasis use their egos to identify themselves as servants of Krishna, their intelligence to make up their minds to act always for his satisfaction, their eyes to see him, their tongues to chant, and their ears to hear his glories. Now have a listen to this. This is very down to earth. It is said, this is from Prabhupada's Krishna book, the chapter where prayers are offered by Lord Brahma to Lord Krishna. It is said that attachment for material objects and home is due to illusion, which makes a living entity conditioned in the material world. But this is only the case for persons who are not Krishna conscious. In the case of the residents of Vrindavan, such obstructions as attachment to hearth and home are non-existent, because their attachment has been directed unto you, and their homes have been converted into temples by your constant presence there. And because they have forgotten everything for your sake, there is no impediment. For a Krishna conscious person, there is no such thing as impediments due to attachment for hearth and home, nor is there illusion. In Vrindavan, there is no distinction between material and spiritual, because everything is dedicated to Krishna's loving service. Isn't it beautiful?
It is.
Yeah. You know, this is the perfection of the process that Prabhupada has given us. But we need a cultural base for us to really blossom.
Yeah.
In this regard. Okay, so let's get a little bit more practical and look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Chaitanya Siksamrita. There he divides the bhakti culture into five stages that need conscious cultivation. cultivation with the body, cultivation with the mind, cultivation with the soul, cultivation with matter, and cultivation with society. Very holistic picture he's giving of how we need to develop this bhakti culture. Before we explore this, we need to understand the fundamental principles underlying this culture. Because if we don't understand the principles on which bhakti culture rests, we're going to become ritualistic. And it's not going to have the same benefit or result.
That's what happens most of the time.
Yeah. So we have to be very, very conscious that there are four fundamental principles on which the bhakti culture rests. The first one, and the most essential of them, is that a cultivation of attraction for Krishna. The primary cultivation is for attraction to Krishna. This is actually the very heart of the bhakti culture. And in essence, it's the purpose of all the five limbs of the bhakti culture that we just mentioned. Now, not enough that the cultivation is there for attraction for Krishna, but it needs to be in the mood that I am his eternal servant. In the mood that I am his eternal servant. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says some very interesting things about this, because we're basically talking about sambandha. We have to have a relationship with Krishna. Only then does the attraction for him have any real meaning. So Bhaktisiddhanta, in his Prakata Rasa Shatadushani, he says, if one lacks knowledge of his relationship with Krishna, sambandha, then the proper execution of devotional service in relationship to him, abhideya, is impossible. One who lacks knowledge of sambandha, the relationship between Krishna and the living entities, can never attain prayojan, the supreme goal of life, namely love of Godhead Krishna Prem.
Actually, yeah, because if you don't know you're the servant,
right,
then you know the process is going to be all wrong.
And the mentality behind it, obviously.
Mood, not correct.
Yeah. So, and the other point is that dasya is the mool or the root of all the rasas. And this is made very beautifully in such a beautiful chapter, the Adi 6, Chaitanya Charitamrita, particularly verses 40 to around 111. It's a very full elaboration of this mood, of dasya. I just wanted to read you a couple of verses from this because they're so beautiful. All the emotions, whether those of father, mother, teacher, or friend, are full of sentiments of servitude. That is the nature of love of Krishna. Another one that's very beautiful. The sweetness of Lord Krishna is not to be tasted by those who consider themselves equal to Krishna. It is to be tasted only through the sentiment of servitude. So this is verse 82 and 103 from Adi 6. So we're getting an idea that this cultivation of attraction for Krishna in the mood that I'm his eternal servant, this is a fundamental thing. It's a very, very important thing.
So whatever the rasa may be, but the attitude of service is there in each rasa.
Yeah, if you read Adi 6, it's wonderful. It's not only very informative, but it's breathtakingly beautiful. It's one of my favorite chapters of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it always pays to have a practical example of what we're talking about. So remembering that this first fundamental underlying principle of the bhakti culture is cultivation of attraction for Krishna in the mood that I'm his eternal servant. I wanted to give an example of Janani Vas Prabhu. Very wonderful Vaishnava. He heads up the Didi department in Mayapur. And I used to do some service in the department. and had the good fortune to have his association. And one day I went up, I had some service, I just had some questions to ask him. And when I walked into the room, he had a tiny little piece of wood and a penknife. And he was very absorbed in cutting away at this wood. So I didn't think much of it. I came for service, so I thought, I'll just ask him the questions. So I asked him the questions, and I went off and did my service. But then I needed to get more verification of what to do. It was about 35 minutes later. So I came back, he was still there, and he was still working on this tiny piece of wood with his penknife. So my curiosity got the better of me. I said, Janani Vasari, what are you doing? And he said, well, Jalbdhan's coming. When we put water on Tulsi and Shalagram. And I thought it would be so much nicer instead of just having the water dripping on Shalagram and Tulsi, if it's Chandan water. So this wood is Chandan, and I'm just shaping it so it'll fit in the pot nicely. Yeah. Wow. Now, he had so many people working under him, and he has so many devotees who would love to do service for him. But he was doing that service. Why? Because of his attachment for Tulsi and Shalagram. If it was just the procedure, okay, this month we give water to Tulsi and Shalagram, same system every year, you know, no improvement, no thought
that's
about what
we're doing.
That's ritualistic, then. Ritualistic,
yeah.
So you're catching it.
Yes.
This is a very important point. The second one, which is extremely important also, it's a fundamental principle, is that hearing and chanting about Krishna is the essential practice to be cultivated. So even when we're looking at all these other limbs of the bhakti culture, the essence is hearing and chanting. That's what most has to be cultivated. And I wanted to read you a little bit about that. Let's have a look at Madhya 22. This is basically an explanation of why this is so. The question why is very important. We need to know why we're doing things. Then we can have the determination and the enthusiasm to do things properly and enthusiastically. So this is from 22.107. Pure love for Krishna is eternally established in the hearts of living entities. It's not something to be gained from another source. When the heart is purified by hearing and chanting, the living entity naturally awakens. So that's very, you know, puts it in a nutshell. And Bhagavatam 11.14, the 25th purport, quoting Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, makes an interesting comment about this. And I'll actually read the 26th verse and a bit of that purport also. Gold alloyed with inferior metals cannot be purified by water and soap. Similarly, the heart's impurities cannot be removed by superficial processes. Only the fire of love of Godhead can cleanse one's soul and send one back home back to Godhead to engage in eternal loving service to the Lord. 26th verse reads, when a diseased eye is treated with medical ointment, it gradually recovers its power to see. Similarly, as a conscious living entity cleanses himself from material contamination by hearing and chanting the pious narrations of my glories, he regains his ability to see me, the absolute truth, in my subtle spiritual form. So it's just making us aware that this is the way, this is a very important thing. And how? How does that happen? How does this awakening happen? That is also explained in Madhya 22, in 109. Those who have not attained the platform of spontaneous attachment... Oh, sorry, I wanted to read you the purport here. This is such a wonderful purport. It's so...
109?
Yeah, 109. Prabhupada is such a genius. Dormant love for Krishna exists in everyone's heart, and it simply has to be awakened by the regulative process of devotional service. One has to learn to use a typewriter by following the regulative principles of the typing book. One has to place his fingers on the keys in such a way and practice. But when one becomes adept, He can type swiftly and correctly without even looking at the keys. Similarly, one has to follow the rules and regulations of devotional service as they sit down with the spiritual master. Then one can come to the point of spontaneous loving service. This love is already there within the heart of everyone. Spontaneous service is not artificial. One simply has to come to that platform by rendering devotional service according to the regulative principles. So that's very special. He gives another angle on it in 105 Purport. Because living entities are minute atomic parts and parcels of the Lord, devotional service is already present within them in a dormant condition. Devotional service begins with Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting. When a man is sleeping, he can be awakened by sound vibration. Therefore, every conditioned soul should be given the chance to hear the Hare Krishna mantra chanted by the pure Vaishnava. One who hears the Hare Krishna mantra thus vibrated is awakened to spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness. In this way, one's mind gradually becomes purified, as stated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chetadapana Marjana. When the mind is purified, the senses are also purified. Instead of using the senses for sense gratification, the awakened devotee employs the senses in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. This is a process by which dormant love for Krishna is awakened. So the third fundamental underlying principle is that Majjham culture is the basic background for bhakti culture. Just to remind us of what the Majjham culture is, we'll have a look at 11.2.46. It's basically just a definition of the behavior of the Majjham. An intermediate or second-class devotee, called Majjham Adhikari, offers his love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a sincere friend to all the devotees of the Lord, shows mercy to ignorant people who are innocent, and disregards those who are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Jiva Dharma, he elaborates on this in a very, very interesting way. Some really key points that he makes here. He quotes this verse, and then he says, "The behavior described in this verse is the behavior of one who follows the eternal religion." Now, what that actually means is described in his Chaitanya Sikshamrita. Very, very interesting. If you don't catch it, I'll read it again. It's very profound. The quality which when offered to the Lord is called bhakti or prem becomes friendship, compassion and indifference when directed towards other living beings. It is a feeling that is inherent in the eternal nature of the soul. In the spiritual realm, this quality manifests simply as friendship. But in the material world, it manifests as friendship towards devotees, mercy towards the innocent, and indifference towards the offenders. These are but different aspects of the same compassion. It's a very interesting insight that he's giving here. So let's have a look at what he says. He doesn't say much about the first point, that it means the behavior pattern will be to love Krishna. He just says that that will show through service.
If you love somebody, you will want to serve.
Yeah, he basically makes that point. But the second one, he says some interesting things. The second of these qualities is that one is friendly to the devotees who are surrendered to the Supreme Lord. Any person in whom pure devotional service is manifested is considered a devotee surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Neophyte devotees are neither pure devotees nor are they surrendered to the Lord. Their tendency is to disrespect the true, pure devotees. Therefore, one should make friendship with intermediate and advanced devotees only. Interesting point.
Why only advanced and intermediate devotees, Mataji?
Because the kanista is likely to disrespect
the other.
Yeah, so you'll get into criticism of devotees and fault finding, all that sort of mentality by associating with them. Then he goes on to explain what we mean by making friendship. It means associating with devotees, conversing with them, and serving them. So that's very interesting. The third of the qualities is that one is merciful to the innocent people in general. And he goes on to explain what an innocent person in general means. That means anyone who basically hasn't come to the Mahjong platform.
Wow!
It's quite interesting.
Wow.
But then he says that for an intermediate devotee, it is absolutely essential that they be merciful to the innocent people in general. As far as possible, he should invite them to his home. But even that is not enough. He should show mercy to such persons by helping them to attain faith in pure devotional service and attraction for the pure holy name of the Lord. So the real way that we show our compassion to the innocent ignorant is that we try and help them attain faith in the pure devotional service, and we help them increase their attraction with your holy name of Krishna. So it's expected that we would give association to such people. The fourth one is very interesting. The fourth of these qualities is that one neglects hateful persons. One should understand the different kinds of hateful persons. Envy is a symptom of hatred. Hatred is the opposite of love. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only true object of love. The opposite of love for him is hatred of him. This hatred manifests in five ways. One, to not believe in the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Two, to believe that the living entity himself has created God. Three, to not believe that God has a form. Four, to not believe that the individual souls are eternally subordinate to God. And five, to be merciless. These five kinds of hatred bring with them, as a byproduct, attachment to material sense gratification. And so he says that the pure devotee, the one in the Madhyam platform, he should avoid such people. But he explains what that means. Avoiding them does not mean that one should renounce all ordinary dealings that one human being naturally has with another. It does not mean that if a hateful person falls into danger or want, one should not try to help him.
Mm-hmm.
In ordinary dealings, one may have relationships with such persons, but in spiritual activities, such persons should be shunned. Meeting for spiritual activities, conversing about spiritual topics, and helping and serving one another in spiritual life are the different kinds of spiritual association. The envious should not be offered such spiritual association.
And also, I think they won't even be willing to be a part of that.
Yeah, that's also a good point. So the Mahjong culture is another fundamental underlying thing there for the bhakti culture. The fourth and last one is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Siksha Mrita 3 is the key to successfully living the bhakti culture. Now, different aspects of this principle are beautifully illustrated in many, many places, but I wanted to read to you that are not only beautiful, but they're very, very powerful meditations. And they really give you an insight into why this verse given by Mahaprabhu is actually so very, very, very important. What I'm going to read to you is from the purport, the BBT purport of 11.2.41. Beautiful meditation. We should offer respect to everything that exists, recognizing it to be the energy of the Lord. Everything that exists is an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and should be respected accordingly. Fear or illusion arises from thinking that there is something not dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must train one's mind to see everything that exists as an expansion of the potency of the Supreme Lord. By offering respects to everything and meditating upon everything as part of the body of the Lord, one will become free from fear. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Shurdam Sarva Bhutanam, Krishna is a well-wishing friend of every living being. As soon as one understands that everything that exists is under the powerful control of one's most beloved friend, one comes to the stage in which the whole universe becomes a blissful abode because he sees Krishna everywhere. So beautiful.
Yes.
I wanted to read you one from Jiva Dhamma also. This is very, very special. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has such an amazing sense of aesthetics. There's such a beauty in what he writes. Have a listen to this. Devotional service is independent. Devotional service is beautiful by itself. It does not need to be decorated by good qualities. But still there are two virtues, humility and mercy, that are not separate from devotional service. They are spontaneously included within devotional service. A person who has devotion to the Lord is naturally humble. He naturally thinks, I'm a servant of Lord Krishna. I'm poverty-stricken. I do not have anything. Krishna is my only treasure, my everything, the be-all and end-all of my life. When a person is situated in devotional service, his heart melts with love for Krishna. Because such a person sees all our living beings as servants of Krishna, his heart also melts with love for them. Thus he has mercy on them. In this way, mercy is naturally included within devotional service. Forgiveness is situated between mercy and humility. In this way, one thinks, I'm poor and fallen. How can I be qualified to punish others? When this thought joins with mercy, forgiveness is born. In this way, forgiveness is also naturally included within devotional service. Krishna is eternal and real. The individual spirit soul is eternal and real. The individual soul service to Lord Krishna is also eternal and real. And the individual soul's temporary sojourn in the material world is also real. In this way, the relationship between the individual soul and Krishna, a relationship that is manifested as devotional service, is eternal and real. Therefore, eternal spiritual reality, humility, mercy, and forgiveness are four things naturally included in devotional service. Oh. So beautiful.
I had a question about the fear part, Manaji. Mm. You know what? I absolutely agree and understand what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is trying to say, that...
Now, that was from Bhagavatam.
Oh, that was from Bhagavatam, okay. Yeah. That, you know, Krishna is the controller of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, and nothing can happen without his desire or mm-hmm. his sanction. Mm-hmm. One knows that. Mm-hmm. But still there are times when you're fearful. You know, maybe it's related to some phobia or something, right?
That's true. But we also have to remember that what we're talking about here is activity, a cultivation. Mm. So this meditation is not just for one-time reading.
So every time you just keep telling, and then slowly one comes to that level.
Culture will work like that. Okay. So let's begin our discussion of the first limb of the bhakti culture. Cultivation with the body. This is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Chaitanya Sikshamrita, third rainfall, second shower. He tells us that there are seven types of bodily cultivation using the external senses. Hearing, chanting, smelling, seeing, touching, tasting, and using the limbs of the body. Now, before we explore all of this, we need to very clearly understand two things. For the same reason that we need to understand the fundamental principles underlying the whole culture. We'll fall into a ritual and we won't be able to take full advantage of what we're being offered here. So let's take careful note of these two important points. First one, We're going to be talking of cultivation with the body, but it's essential that the mind and intelligence are consciously involved in doing this.
Hmm.
Not that we're just ritualistically doing something, but we're consciously involving.
But when you do that, like sometimes you are conscious, but there are times when, you know,
yeah,
it is just like mechanical. It's
right. So we have to overcome that tendency. Because if there is unintelligent and mindless practice, it's going to be kind of productive. What's the difference between doing that and working in a factory?
So it's just always keep reminding yourself.
Once you become aware of how the culture works, it tends to make you more conscious. The problem that we've found to date is that we're following a process, but we're not really understanding how it works. We're not really understanding what we're involved in.
Right.
So that makes life a little bit difficult. The other thing we need to understand is the science behind this very practical aspect of the body, a bhakti culture, cultivating, where we're using the body.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very practical thing. What I want to do is explore a fundamental aspect of this science by looking at two things, paragati and pratyagati. You familiar with these terms?
No.
Okay. So before we go into an elaboration on them, it's useful to always first have a little bit of an idea so the mind's got something to hold on to. So let's have a look at the Sanskrit. With paragati, it means to turn away or divert.
Mm.
Or to be far away. And pratyagati means to turn towards or to be close.
Oh, yeah? So they're opposites.
Yeah, like that. Now the interesting thing is that Prabhupada gives examples of this in his purport to NOI 4. Very interesting. Let me just read that to you. When you know the technical terms and the technicalities involved, you pick these things up. But if you don't know them, it's just interesting reading.
With the initiate, is it?
Mm-hmm. So let's have a listen. This is pratyag, turning towards. In this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami explains how to perform devotional activities in the association of other devotees. There are six kinds of activities: giving charity to devotees, accepting from the devotees whatever they may offer in return, opening one's mind to the devotees, inquiring from them about confidential service of the Lord, honoring prasad or spiritual food given by the devotees, and feeding the devotees with prasad. And he goes on to say that the life of the Krishna consciousness society is nourished by these six types of loving exchange among the members. Therefore, people must be given the chance to associate with the devotees of ISKCON, because simply by reciprocating in the six ways mentioned above, an ordinary man can fully revive his dormant Krishna consciousness. And then he says that, a little further on, he says that this verse that he's talking about is the process, there's brief mention of the process of making loving transactions with the Supreme Person of Godhead and making friends with the devotees.
Mm.
So we're looking at Majjhama culture.
Mm.
But then he goes on to talk about paragati. Even in ordinary social activities, these six types of dealing between two loving friends are absolutely necessary. For instance, when one businessman wishes to contact another businessman, he arranges a feast in a hotel. And over the feast, openly expresses what he wants to do. He then inquires from his business friend how he should act, and sometimes presents are exchanged. Thus, whenever there is dealing of priti, or love, and intimate dealings, these six activities are executed. So, they look the same, but the result is very, very different, and that's what we're going to look at. This is the science that we're going to look at. Let's take a look at paragati first. Because of forgetfulness of one's identity, the conditioned soul, under the influence of false ego, identifies with his body. the priti or the love, the affection that is the constitutional nature of a living entity is at present pervertedly transformed into affection for objects of the senses. This material attachment is called the current of parag.
What of parag?
Current.
Current.
In other words, one's internal, eternal feelings. Feelings that are internal and eternal. Those feelings are improperly flowing externally. When one's spiritual propensity is carried away by this perverted current via the senses, one becomes absorbed in material objects and then becomes absorbed in material sense objects. We use all our senses to seek out sense gratification through matter. This current, paragati, is so powerful that it's not possible for the mind to check it. And Prabhupada mentions this, or rather Govindadev mentions this in Bhagavad Gita. 260, he says, the senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind, even if a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. Now, in 259, Prabhupada mentions that there are two ways for checking this current. He says, this is Govinda speaking again, 259. Though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. Now what he's really talking about here is two alternatives. Restricting the senses or experiencing a higher taste. So what we're looking at is Vaidhi Sadhana or Raga Nuga Sadhana.
Yes.
Okay. Now, if we read that, and that's all we see, we don't really go much further with what's being said. But if we're a little conscious and we're thoughtful, we'll think, okay, I don't want to be absorbed in Vaidhisharada. I don't want my faith to be in rules and regulations. I don't want to restrict my goal to that. At the same time, I don't want to act artificially. I don't want to try and do something that I don't have adhikara to do. So I want to know what's the path from one to two.
Yes.
I want spontaneous love for Krishna. That's not where I am now. But how do I get there? So that means that we need to very consciously and seriously follow pratyagati.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'll explain now. This is the ultimate process. This pratyagati is the ultimate process to divert the current of attachment from sense objects and redirect it towards Krishna and Krishna consciousness, and it's very, very simple. We continue to do all the same things, but we simply Krishnaize them for the pleasure of Krishna. This is very clearly explained by example by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Krishna Samhita. So let's have a look at what he says. When you realize how simple this is, you'll say, my God, why am I wasting my time? You know, when you know what you're doing, it makes life so much
easier
and far more effective. So we're talking about pratyag. Sometimes it's called pratyak. People who follow the pratyak current have established the whole world as a Vaishnav family by dovetailing material objects in God consciousness. People who enjoy eating grains can eat mahaprasad that has been offered to the Lord and in this way practice the pratyak current of the tongue. Similarly, those who are fond of hearing can hear the names and pastimes of the Lord and thus practice the pratyak current of the ears. In this way, they gradually engage their senses and sense objects in the service of the Lord and thus increase their internal current of rag towards Krishna by providing their senses a higher taste. So we're getting a taste of devotional rasa rather than material rasa. So very, very interesting. And then he goes on to say that another way we can look at it, this particular aspect of the science, also means that we consciously choose sense objects that will help us develop rag for Krishna.
Sense objects?
Yeah. And this is called cultivation of bhakti using the body. I'm going to read you a few examples. When you've got this kind of protection, this kind of knowledge, it makes things so much easier, as you said. He's talking about cultivation of sense objects. The objects for the eyes are the deity, the temple, the scriptures, the holy places, spiritual dramas, and spiritual festivals. It's not all-inclusive, he's just giving a few examples. The objects of the ears are scriptures, songs, lectures, and conversations. The objects for the nose are mahatulsi, flowers, sandalwood, and other fragrant items offered to the Lord. The objects for the tongue are kirtan, and taking a vow to accept only palatable foodstuffs and drinks that were offered to the Lord. So like this, you're getting the idea.
Hmm.
So one way we can do it is things we have attachment for, instead of just eating anywhere, we take mahaprasad rice. We like pulao. Okay, we eat mahaprasad pulao.
Yeah, just make whatever you like.
Yeah. And the wonderful thing about this is that both Nectar of Devotion and Chaitanya Shikshamrita, they both tell us that it's a regular principle to offer your favorite thing to the deity.
Yeah.
That's actually a kindness of Krishna.
Yes.
It's actually this kindness.
Yeah.
Because by offering your favorite thing, that rasa you have with matter is being transformed into a rasa with Krishna. You're giving, it's a loving exchange. You're giving in,
Yeah.
You're giving something dear.
Yeah, like, this is dear to me, I like it, so I'm offering this to you.
You know, it's very sweet. So the ultimate beauty of following this pratyagati is that the senses become purified and we gradually transcend the conditioned state. We attain spiritual status and become purified of all designations. Srila Prabhupada, in his preface to NRD, he tells us that the senses can then become uncontaminated, being constantly in touch with bhakti rasa. When the purified senses are employed in the service of the Lord, one becomes situated in bhakti rasa life, and any action performed for the satisfaction of Krishna in this transcendental bhakti rasa stage of life can be relished perpetually. When one is thus engaged in devotional service, all varieties of rasas and mellows turn into eternity.
Wow.
So this is real emotional nourishment and satisfaction. Okay. Any questions? So we're ready to go on to the actual...
It's just so amazing that, I've read this bit so many times, that how you can spiritualize everything, And doesn't really strike, but now that you're saying it, it's just making so much sense.
Yeah. It's a cultural base.
You can hear it again, so it will help.
Yeah. So let's go on and have a look at cultivation with the body. We're going to be looking specifically at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Chaitanya Shikshamrita. And as we said earlier, he's divided it into seven aspects.
This is the body.
Yeah, cultivation with the body. The seven types of bodily cultivation he's talking about are hearing, chanting, smelling, seeing, touching, tasting, and using the limbs of one's body. First one, cultivation through hearing, may be hearing the scriptures, the Lord's name, or songs and lectures about the Lord. Hearing scriptures consists of listening to topics on the philosophical status of the Lord, descriptions of the Lord's activities, stories of the lives of devotees, this kind of thing. Now remember that one of the underlying principles of this culture is that we're looking at attraction for Krishna.
Hmm.
So then we have to see, and that hearing and chanting is another one of these fundamental bases. So then we're going to have to consciously use our mind and intelligence to decide, okay, what's most appropriate for me to hear?
Yes.
Given my goal, what's most appropriate? And given my identity tag, I'm a Prabhupada Nuga, I'm a Rupa Nuga, I'm a follower of Mahaprabhu. All these things. So can you see the point? It's not just a matter of we just hear something, but yes, we consciously shape our hearing.
Yes.
It's systematic.
Yeah. Like that. He goes on to say that devotees will listen to those songs that cultivate bhakti by description of the Lord's pastimes rather than those songs that merely satisfy the senses. Devotees should strictly avoid those songs that increase the material attachment of the mind. Prayers and instrumental music should be heard while offering service to the deity. So there's some very beautiful prayers which we've given you. So use them. Second one, cultivation through chanting is extremely powerful. There are five types of chanting: recitation of scripture, recitation of the Lord's name and pastimes, recitation of slokas, prayers, and japa. In Krishna Samhita, teaching and preaching also
is chanting.
Are also within chanting. Cultivation of bhakti by using the sense of smell, smelling maha flowers, tulsi, sandalwood, incense, garlands, and camphor that have been offered to the Lord. Smelling those items that have not been offered to the Lord only increases attachment to material senses and should be avoided.
Wow.
Little subtleties.
Yeah.
Fourth one, cultivation of sight is performed by seeing the deity, the devotees, holy places, the temple, dramatic performances, photos of the Lord. The sense of sight focused on material forms can throw a person into the well of material life, and therefore seeing material forms must be avoided. So how are you going to do that? You're constantly surrounded by,
yeah,
and we're very visual. This age, we're very visual, and we're constantly looking at things. So how are we going to do that? How are we going to avoid seeing material forms? He goes on to explain that whatever a person sees in the world, they must relate it to Krishna. There's a lot of this in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna himself gives a lot of ideas. And we can also look at the Mahabhagavats. We see with Gokashodas Babaji, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was very, very keen that he come to Calcutta and see the first train. So somehow or other he managed to get into Calcutta, and they were at the train station waiting for the train to come in. And when it came in, Gokashodas Babaji fainted. And after some time, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur managed to bring him to consciousness. And he said, "Why did you faint, Maharaj?" And he explained to him that the wheels reminded him of Ras Leela.
Wow.
This is perfection.
Wow.
This is perfection.
Like Mukunda's story.
Yeah, also.
The peacock.
Yeah, and the position of sword and peacock. Yeah, that's the story. So, you know, these are things that we have. We're talking cultivation. We have to cultivate these things. That means we do them again and again. We're consciously doing them. The fifth one, the devotee should become detached from the sensation of touch related to external objects and take joy in touching the form of the deity. Satisfaction can also be gained by touching and embracing devotees. Krishna Samhita also adds air of holy places, pure water, associating with a chaste Vaishnavi wife, did we get a child, puts all of these things in this category. Bhaktivinoda Thakur then goes on to say that the sense of touch is very powerful, leading to sins such as illicit sexual activities. The devotee must vow under no circumstances to touch anyone except devotees. Touch does not refer to bodily contact as such. You've got to go to dentists, you've got to go to doctors. So it's not the bodily contact as such, but the bodily contact that produces sense pleasure in the heart.
Okay.
This principle, he says, should be applied to all of these things. The sixth one, the devotee can use the tongue in tasting food offered to the Lord and taking water used to wash the feet of the Lord, Charanamrita. The devotee does not eat anything except prasadam of the Lord. By tasting material foods, material conviction gradually becomes stronger. Remnants of the Lord and of the devotee should be eaten, both nourish bhakti. Seventh and last limb. Moving the limbs refers to dancing, paying respects, rising in respect, following after the deity or devotee, going to the temple, parikram, serving the guru and Vaishnava, worshipping the Lord, bathing in holy water, putting on Vaishnava markings, and putting the Lord's name on the body. In this manner, the devotee cultivates bhakti to the Lord by engaging the body. Since the conditioned souls are bound by a material body, they must perform the necessary activities of the body. But they should perform the activities in such a way that they do not become further material affected. By dovetailing all the activities of the body with bhakti to Krishna, they are able to cultivate their relationship with Him. I think we'll stop there. It's given you pretty much of an introduction. And next session we'll go on with cultivation of the mind. Any questions before we start?
No questions about the body.
Yeah, the touch bit was... I'm glad that he clarifies it because, you know, sometimes you go to the market, there are like so many people.
Yeah, yeah. So. No, he's not talking that.
Okay. Yeah. So Mataji, sometimes, you know, we practice different things and it's always like so difficult to surrender because you're telling yourself, don't do this, don't do that. Mm. And after some time the mind revolves and then you just can't carry on like that.
The problem at the moment is that we aren't aware of the cultural base of what we're doing and we're not aware of the science of pratyagati. So what we're dealing with is rules and regulations. And the mind, its nature is to accept and reject. Mm. So some days it's going to do it and sometimes it's not going to do it. It's just the way the mind works.
Yes.
But when you understand that I'm dealing with a culture, I'm wanting to cultivate my bhakti, my spontaneous love for Krishna, and I have a science to do it, it's pratyagati. It's the way that we turn towards Krishna. When I'm aware of that, and I know the details, how I do it with the body, how I do it with the mind, how I deal with society, how I deal with everything.
And then it's so easy.
Then it becomes a whole different picture.
Wow.
Make sense?
Yes. Actually, I mean, I'm surprised that, you know, we didn't do this earlier.
Takes a while.